order, and I will let Marcy Benda go ahead with the roll call. Thank you.
Okay. Brian Arnold.
Here.
Hi. Michael Boggs.
Here.
Frank Cantone.
Present.
Sean Chang. Carl Cornell.
Present.
Erica Crawley. I think she's coming. Rebecca Dillon. There's Erica. Erica's here. Bethany Dixon.
Present.
Okay. Hi. Jamie Doss.
Present.
Thomas Hanbury.
Here.
Don Henshaw.
Here.
Kyle Carnuda.
Here.
Ellie Crum. Jeremy Cruiser. Sophie Lanchez.
Here.
Ann Morse.
Present.
Kevin Phipps. Stephanie Rizzo. Yvonne Solis Cruz. Phil Soroka.
Present.
Kate Supran. Deborah Sarine.
Here.
Wendy Treat.
Present.
Jana Van Houten is here. And Danielle Weirson. Weirson.
Present.
I always do that. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Marcy. Okay, now I'm going to the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. At this time, I would like to see if anyone has any late additions they would like to add to the agenda. Okay. With that, we are going to skip item number three. I'm sorry, Sophie.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you.
I have a late agenda, so this is about the Employee Assembly Award. So we finally got a little bit of like backtracking, and we need to vote on whether we should give points to future Employee Assembly Award winners. And
Okay,
then
great.
if we should also give points to the Einhorn Center winners for 2023.
Excellent. Thank you. Wendy?
Just procedurally, if this is a late agenda item, we just need to figure where we want to add it in the agenda.
Yeah, that sounds great. How about right after the universe, right after between item five and six? Okay, excellent. So we'll reserve that part of the discussion for right after item five. Excellent, thank you. Okay, so moving on. So we don't have the minutes. We'll get those for the next meeting to approve. So right now we're going to move into item four, and I'm going to turn it over to Erica Crawley, who serves as a University Assembly Executive Vice Chair, and she's going to provide us with an update to the expressive activities policy. Thank you so much for doing this, Erica. Go right ahead.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. So I wanted to provide everyone with kind of a summary of the UA execs meeting with General Counsel Varner and one of the members from her team, Stephanie Seckler, because we were able to have kind of robust discussion about like where the policy came from, what went into the policy, right? And why it came at such an abrupt kind of time for everyone, right? So just as some context, this policy has been being written since August of 2022. That's the earliest that General Counsel Varner had been in contact with the framework of the policy. So they began working on it August 2022. And it was in response to the fact that since we moved from a campus code of conduct that governed faculty, staff, and students to a student code of conduct to have time, place, and manner restrictions in place for everyone in the community, so faculty, students, staff. However, the urgency behind pushing the policy out was due to a Title VI lawsuit that was lodged against the university. Our university was one of the first five universities to have a Title VI lawsuit issued originally by the OCR, so the Office of Civil Rights, but then it became picked up by the Department of Education. So whenever there's a lawsuit in the same strain with OCR, they drop their lawsuit and yield to whomever has that additional lawsuit there. So with us, it's the Department of Education. And so with that being said, we were being charged with creating an anti-Semitic environment for students on campus. Well, technically our campus community, just creating an anti-Semitic environment. And so they wanted to investigate. Well, the lawsuit is still current. So they are investigating if we have proper time, place, and manner restrictions for assembly, right? And so they pushed out this policy that was already in the works so that they could prove that there was something in place for both faculty, staff, and student. That was an amalgamation of different policies that already existed on campus, but they just needed to all be in one place. So that was the reason that they put it out as quickly as they put it out. But there was work that went into establishing what they would put into this policy from other places. So they did do some benchmarking from Ivy Plus schools. So that's all of the Ivies plus Stanford and MIT. Right. And what they were able to find out is that all of the other schools, with the exception of Cornell, Harvard, and UPenn, require registration of events. And you can't advertise the events unless they are registered in advance. So this includes protests. So they have designated protesting areas and a registration requirement before even being able to publicize it to their communities. Whereas Harvard and Penn didn't have anything set in place for protest, time, place, and manner. They didn't have anything. So Cornell had to establish like where our things were, right? And put them in one place so that it's easily accessible for the community. So those were things that they shared with us. They did recognize that they did not use the shared governance structures. However, they did reach out to different pieces of our respective constituencies. So VP Lombardi met with some student leaders around this policy creation. There were staff, the event staff that would be mostly on hand with navigating student protests, whether they register it or not. So those are the people who deal with, like, I think it's, what is it called? Live 25 or campus groups. They were consulted about how that would impact their work because they would be the people registering these events, right? And then there was Faculty Senate that was the portion of Faculty Senate that was consulted there. And those were the pieces that they reached out to in haste, right? So I'm not going to pretend like I have all of the answers to the questions that you may have for me today, right? But if there are some questions that you have that I have the ability to answer, we'll definitely welcome those questions. And if I have some answers here, I can do that, or I can take those questions back to VP Barner so we can get some clarity around those things.
Anyone have any questions? So, we did have a leader. Oh, yes, go right ahead, Hey.
Hi, Erica. Thanks so much for all your time and your work on this. I feel like I attended this breakfast that Jana was mentioning really quickly, and I feel like we got a lot of answers from that. I feel like for this group, would it be helpful to talk a little bit about the process for this? I think some units, when I say units, but some individuals were really concerned about why this policy, why now? And there was a lot of conversation around safety is our priority. We are trying to, coalesce all of these different policies that already exist in all of these spaces into one policy. And this is a work coming from the 2019 campus climate work that was already done. But I think that only answered a portion of it, and I think you were really talking about some other aspects of this, like the federal sort of I don't know, outreach or sort of the federal impetus for this, but then also the internal impetus for this, and maybe it would be helpful to talk about maybe the internal impetus for this. So federally, it seems like there's been a lot of conversation around this campus climate and activity around protests on campus and all of those things. But internally, why is it necessary for there to be this sort of policy? Maybe that would be helpful to sort of talk about.
So from my understanding, once the campus code of conduct was, I don't want to, I don't know what the proper term is, dismantled, just not used, not being used anymore, right? Because we have a student code of conduct now. There was a gap in expectations being set for time, place, and manner specifically. With that not being there, right? So there is no guidance around time, place, and manner for students, faculty, and staff that is in one place. It used to be the campus code of conduct, but since we don't have a campus code of conduct anymore, we only have the student code of conduct, we needed something that put everything in one place.
I'm going to go to Bethany and then Marcy.
All right. Thank you so much for all that background, Erica. That's really helpful to know. I'm not at all expecting you to answer this question. This is sort of just like a broad EA question to see how others feel about this. I've been thinking a lot back to the town halls that Mary Opperman used to hold during early COVID days and sort of throughout the most confusing COVID times that EA co-sponsored. And I feel like one thing that those that was actually what got me really interested in EA and in sort of like, I don't know, understanding how leadership advocate for and communicate with staff. And I feel like one thing that I have been missing in all the different whether it's like the leadership breakfast or that town hall that we hosted or the follow-up emails is I haven't felt that leadership has just said very simply, like, we understand that you are really troubled by the timing of this policy, by the climate, that you were feeling really anxious. And like, I feel like I guess I can sort of try to guess why that isn't happening for a variety of like, who knows, maybe legal reasons or just not wanting to open themselves up for more criticism. But I really feel like that is, pretty strongly lacking. And I think that that would go a long way in terms of just making staff and faculty and students feel like leadership isn't clueless about the real impacts this timing is having. I mean, it's totally valid to say, like, all these policies were being worked on like a couple of years ago. They've been in progress for a long time. That doesn't mean that if a vast majority of your campus climate is saying, we feel concerned and confused, I think that needs to be acknowledged by our leaders. And there's a way to do that that doesn't set them up to have to solve it for us, right? Like, they can say, we understand how you're feeling, we hear you, and we're trying our best. Like, they don't have to say, like, we're going to make you all happy, because that is never possible. But anyway, I just wondered if there was a way that, like, maybe our executive committee could sort of communicate that only if others are feeling the same from their colleagues. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Bethany. Mercy.
Hi, yep. Thank you, Erica, for all that information. I've been to all these meetings and I didn't know some of that. I do feel they did talk about town halls or possibly having an additional town hall, but we did just have a town hall. The University Assembly also did as well. There was discussion about maybe having another one, a little bit more cohesive and a little bit more direct, and not so much a free for all of feelings maybe that the UA had a few months ago in regards to this. My question was, and something that was discussed in the University Assembly meeting was to provide feedback, a way to provide feedback on this policy, and to see how everyone feels. I mean, I know how people who I work with feel, but how do we feel as the EA? I would love to get a more cohesive answer. Do we have strong feelings? Do we have, I feel like working at the Vet College, there aren't protests going on over here, but friends who work down campus are impacted. There's disruptiveness. It can be scary at times. It can be jarring, with and that's the nature of a protest, to be disruptive. And the reason that they were given, at least what I've heard from the leadership, especially this morning, was the reason why these policies are in place is because they are disruptive, which is the nature of a protest. But to be disruptive, you must come, there will be consequences. You're being disruptive to get attention, to also bring attention to your cause. I personally would just love to know, and the best way to get our feedback. Should it be by email? Do you just want to mention it today in this meeting? The best way. Love to hear what everyone has to say. And also your feeling, their discussion about what should the consequences be. It'll be different for students, it'll be different for staff. Would love to hear other people's thoughts.
Thanks, Marcy. Yeah, I wonder if it would be easy to do like a Qualtrics poll that I could send out to everyone and they could submit their feedback that way. That way we don't have to spend a good chunk of the meeting going through this. But anyway, let's think about that and Kyle and then Erica.
I don't know, Erica, were you responding to that? Because if you are, then I can wait.
Oh, thank you. Good point.
Yeah, I just wanted to provide a little additional context with respect to Marcy's comment. There's also this degree of striking a balance between students, faculty, staff right to protest, and also student, faculty, staff right to engage in university operations as well. So there was issues of students not being able to make it to their prelims on time and having prelims rescheduled. There was issue of people not being able to actually teach in their classrooms or conduct their research in the way that they were supposed to be doing because of disruptions that were coming into academic spaces. So they're trying to find a way with this policy to strike a balance between allowing students to amplify their voices for their cause, students, faculty, staff, right? But also finding a way to still allow people to engage in the academic environment as well. So th that's also where the murkiness lies, trying to find a line.
I'll go right ahead.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Erica. And I'm glad that you spoke because I had a follow-up to what Marcy was saying anyway. But that is really helpful. And I think this like whole issue, I think just like requires such an in-depth conversation about like it really centers around the role of a university and freedom of speech and integrity of speech at the university level, especially in a time in this country where that is being called into question in so many other institutions. So I think that's probably where so much of the like emotional response to this has come from, because there's so much else, like the context around this conversation is just coming from all sides. But related to that, I feel like I've been hearing from a lot of folks in my department after the comment period closed to give comment on the feedback, and I've been like telling people like, I think you guys are getting the emails, like just make sure you're reading your emails because it was in your inbox. But I've made this comment before, we get so many emails from Cornell that are all branded the same, so it's really easy to miss one because you think it's like just the general marketing email, but then it's actually something really important. So I am wondering, I'm having office hours with my department in like 8 days, so I'm wondering if there is something that can be done, or if there are further town halls, like is there anything that I can start telling people now that they're coming to me and they're kind of panicking and they're saying, oh, like we just found out about this because like now people have given comments and like the rumor mill has started, you know, like people are hearing about it after someone participated and now it's many weeks later that others are hearing about it. Is there any other way for people to get their voices heard or like give input on this issue so that they don't feel like they've been excluded?
I don't know, Marcy, would it make sense to have them have Kyle send the feedback she receives to us, or is that, or Erica, you might even be able to chime in with that. But I mean, because this is not done, we're still very beginning. Yeah, there's still a lot of work that has to be done. So I think if that should work, if you want to provide feedback to us.
Yeah, they also said this is sorry, it's getting loud. There's an and this is an interim policy, but they would like to get it done sooner rather than later. Their goal is to have it completely finalized by the fall. But yeah, so it's still definitely in discussion. I'm welcome feedback, although the University Assembly was kind of tasked with gathering the information. So either, you know, I'm on the University Assembly, but Erica might be appropriate to get the information too.
Yeah, if you want to send it to me, that's fine, right? If you're going to gather the information from your department and just send it over in an email, that'll be helpful as we draft as a UA, like our response to the interim policy, whether that's us making recommendations for how they should change it, right? Or completely rejecting it. Whatever that resolution looks like, we would love to include the feedback from your area.
Amazing. And I did just have a follow-up about the committee that's being put together to inform the changes. That's another thing that people are asking me about. And I'm like, I don't have any information. Is there something specific we should be telling people about that process, like what they should expect?
All I know with regard to this committee that's being built is that we have some suggestion that the people who sit on that committee also come from our constituencies. I know that the Dean of Faculty is really pushing for that to be a goal for them to have somebody from one of each of our elected bodies to also sit in that space. So we have some shared governance present. For that committee. However, they haven't told us how they're going to be creating this committee or who they're looking at to sit on it, but they're welcoming suggestions on how to create that committee as well.
Erica, hey.
Hi, I second everything Erica said. It sounds like there will be some sort of coalition of representation from faculty, staff, students on this body. It sounds like there is this period right now where we are collecting sort of feedback from the community and trying to figure out how to aggregate all of the different perspectives. So it sounds like whoever's going to be chosen from each of these constituencies will be sort of providing that sort of feedback. So I wonder if there are some concerns that your constituencies are sharing, if there is some way to maybe funnel it through the executive committee to say, here's what we've collected thus far. And so that we have a route to sort of move that feedback from the staff perspective to that eventual body. I think that would be really great. And I feel like these conversations with Erica, you know, with Jana, helped to sort of identify maybe, what the future is moving forward for this commentary period. I think overall, when they launched this interim policy, I think the community was struggling with why this policy, why now? And I feel like if we have more conversations about it, it becomes a little bit more clear, why it is necessary and what we do agree upon, which is that, you know, we want to respect people's ability to protest, but we also want to protect everybody's sense of belonging. And also we're here at Cornell to promote higher education. And can we do that if there are a lot of disruptions? Do we agree on that? I think we can. I think we do. But then the vehicle to get there without making people feel like their voices are not being heard, you're not addressing those issues, I think that's where the contention comes from. So the more opportunities we get to engage with one another and really talk through this, I think the better the rolling out of whatever version of this policy is. I think that's kind of the pathway towards success there. When we have more opportunities to dispel misinformation and really talk through how we're understanding what's happening, because I was really sort of not on very solid ground with this policy to begin with, and I'm still working out what it all means myself. So yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Ahe. Okay. Anyone else have anything they'd like to add or ask Erica or? Okay, so I think this is really informative. Thank you, Erica, so much. That was a really great update. So I think maybe what we can do just to get a general sense and to, you know, have a vehicle for you to provide your general feedback, any feedback that you may have heard from your constituents up until this point. And I know I've taken a good deal of notes, but maybe just, I know I haven't heard from everyone. So I'm thinking I might just create a short Qualtrics survey just to give you the opportunity to provide any feedback if you'd like. And that way we can start to compile that for the next round of this, the, you know, possible revisions to this interim policy. So okay. So with that, we can move along to item five, the university assembly. So there is a vacancy for an EA member to sit on the university assembly. It is a great assembly. So you can learn a little bit about all of the assemblies. So it meets currently every 2 weeks, Tuesdays, 4:45. To 6:15 generally. So, you know, I wanted just to see if there was anyone who would like to you know, serve in that role. And Marcy, you might, as a current UA member as well, have something. I don't know if you'd like to add anything additionally, or even Jeremy from serving in that role. And thank you, Jeremy, for serving in this as long as you did. But
I would love to just say there are only three more meetings. But it is obviously the administration holds the UA in regard. It's the combination of all the assemblies. It's representative from all of the assemblies put together, especially with this current interim policy. They're pretty much tasking it with the university assembly. So it's, even if it's just for a couple meetings, you know, just go in, you can zoom in, you don't have to go, although it's a nice area and it's a nice chance to get down campus. How many representatives are there from the EA? I believe there's three, four. Wendy might know this better than I.
The University Assembly, as Marcy said, is covered, it comprises all of the assemblies and the faculty senate. And from the employee assembly, there is the chair. So currently Jana, two EA members, and then to non-EA members, so it can be any of our constituents. If we don't have anyone that is a non-EA member, an EA member can fill that position. So there's five actually that have representation from Employee Assembly.
Thanks, Wendy. Okay. So I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but especially with just three meetings left, you could really get a good taste or feel of how it operates. And they will be working on this policy as well, the interim express expressive policy. So anyway, if you decide you would like to serve in that capacity, please send me an email and I would love to go ahead and get you in that role. You can get a feel for what it's like. So, any questions about that before we move on? Okay. All right. So that said, we will go and turn it over to Sophie.
Thank you. Okay, so for vote one, it's in regard to should we award points to Employee Assembly Award winners moving forward? And some context is that in the past, there's been some inconsistencies in awarding winners points. Some departments may have 200 employees, and other departments may have less employees, and so it's thinking about let's say if we have a winner, a department that has 200 employees and it's 10 points, that would be like about 2,000 points, right? Whereas if we have another department that has 40 employees, then we would have to give 400 points. And thinking about this, EA Employee Assembly could budget for awarding points so that if we do have larger departments, we could still give them points. Yeah, so either vote yes for giving points to EA award winners, or either no for not giving points to award winners. Erica, oh, yeah, Erica, go ahead.
Maybe I just don't know, but what is the point structure and like how does that play into how a person or department is awarded for EA awards? Just so we have some context, because I don't know what I would be voting for.
Okay, so there's an appreciation portal. Where these points is given to an individual. And so it's kind of like a gift card in this appreciation portal where they could use the points to like for different things like shops. And usually for the Employee Assembly award, they get a plaque and a certificate. And so the points is just like an extra gift on top of that. Any other questions before we vote, just so that there's clarification?
Yeah, Wendy and then Anne.
It's not a question, it's just a comment. My concern would be is for the Employee Appreciation Award, which is an award, it's separate from like the George Peter Distinguished Award and all that kind of stuff. It's something that we as Employee Assembly members nominate and vote on. It could be anywhere from a department that has five people to a whole department that has 35 people. So keeping in mind, and also budgetary wise, like we vote on our budget lines every year. We also have new assembly members every year because we do when we do the our elections, we stagger it so that we have basically a third of our assembly is new. That would be only like my kind of catch. And the reason, just so to provide more history from what Sophie provided as well, the reason this happened, that the points were even given, was it was a miscommunication and an email was sent to a previous Employee Assembly Award winner or group that says you've been awarded points when we hadn't budgeted that. So we actually, the employee assembly at that time had to vote and basically add a budget line so that they could do that. That would be my only concern. I mean, yeah, it's a nice perk. But also going forward, we have to remember that there's different people each year that are in the employee assembly. So, and plus it could be a varying group of people. Michael, it's mainly a department award. It's not usually an individual award. This year it was awarded to the Einhorn Center for Community Engagement. Last year it was actually awarded to two groups. It was awarded to a group here at the Vet College and neurodiversity, I believe. So yeah, it usually is a department or a unit. It's not a full entire college or anything like that, but like I said, the unit or the office or the department could vary in numbers.
Thanks for that
So is
context,
that why
Elizabeth.
the size of the department matters because of the size of the points that would be given out?
Yes.
Times 5 or times 30 or something like that? Thank you.
Yeah, it could vary greatly. Yeah, Anne, go right ahead, please.
Thank you. My question's a bit along the lines of Wendy's. I'm new to the EA, so I don't understand how the budget works yet. So I'm not sure if this is then taking money from some pocket that should go somewhere else. And I'm also not clear about if there's any kind of bias in what departments might be eligible to get points or not. I don't know if all departments, I don't know enough about this yet, so I'm wondering if you can give me any clarity on how the budgeting works for it.
I don't know. That's a great question. I know that go ahead, Marcy or Wendy.
Wendy might be better to answer this, but I can just say we've got a budget. There is a budget that we vote on at the beginning of the year. We're given a budget. Used to be that we'd have this meeting would be in person and there'd be meals. So money would go towards that. Last year there was a surplus because we were mostly Zoom, and now this year we're all Zoom. But we still budget for the meals. So last year we just had to get together at the end of the year to for the surplus of money. It doesn't roll into the next year, so it's not like the money will roll into anything. If we don't use it, we will lose it for one thing. And so we will have to pay for these points for this award. I think that was everything, Wendy, unless I missed something.
I was actually, Kate is on the call, so I don't know if she's busy. She's got her camera off or anything like that. But as our vice chair, she does put a resolution forth, as Marcy said at the beginning of the term, with our budget. As Kate's camera comes back on, there we go. But yeah, it's something that each assembly at the beginning of the term, so usually in the fall, we do vote on a budget, and we would have to. You know, the new assembly would have to incorporate this into the budget. What we're currently discussing, though, is the group that was just awarded this award in January at the President's Address of Staff. Do we like somewhat retroactively? It's a couple of months after the point. Do we go ahead and award points to this current group, and then kind of moving forward, like how do we as a body or you know as a unit or yeah, as a body address. I think that covers it.
Any other questions?
Danielle, you can go. Sorry, Jana.
Oh, no.
I was curious, how many points are we talking per person? What is the cost for this? What is the range? Obviously, it depends on department, but what would be like the monetary value per person that we're talking about for this award?
Sophie, do you know? I think it's $10 for 10 points. A point is a dollar, is my understanding.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So yeah, you see how we could run into some issues, especially if two departments receive the award, which is possible. I don't know how sustainable that would be, I guess, my thought. But I don't know. Should we just go ahead and move into voting on that? Kyle, go ahead.
Also a new person question, but as far as like our budget in general, like if that's the concern is potentially the budget implication, do we typically have a surplus budget at the end of the year? Like, are we looking to spend funds or are we usually pretty tight? Like, where are we spending the money? I'm sorry, this is such a big question. I just haven't seen it yet.
No, that's a good question. Kate, I don't know if you...
Yeah, so like we have a budget of about $10,000 a year, and we didn't use it the last, really very much of it the last few years, and the budget was based on the fact that we used to meet in person and provide lunch for the EA meetings for all EA members. We tried resuming meetings in person last year, and frankly, no one came. Even when Martha Pollack came to speak to the assembly and we put a big push out to get people to come, we were not able to get people to come in person. So we stopped that. We are limited in what we can do with the funds. We've been, there's interest, and I was, if we get to it, we can talk about it. The Human Resource Department of, what do we call it, employee well-being. And I've been talking with Cassie Pierre-Joseph. She would be interested in the EA hosting welcome events for new employees, whether it's like having people sign up for lunch or having a reception. I've said we couldn't do any kind of formal programming, but that we could, you know, host a reception or some lunch with those with some of our funds, which I believe we can do. But we aren't able, say, to give the money to the care fund. We can't, you know, we can't do that with it. And we can't just donate it to something else. We can't like give it to the United Way. It just rolls back in. So that is a conversation we need to have of how to budget moving forward and what, I don't think anyone's about to say we can't have $10,000, but we have to spend it in certain ways. So we do pay for the president's address to staff and for staff forums. So, you know, some of the money does get used. I hope that's helpful. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Carl and then Wendy.
Yeah, I think that the vote today is a little bit ambiguous. Are we voting to use kind of the funds that we already have in reserve to award an award that we've already had? Or are we voting from here on out to use funds to fund this award? Because I think those are two different questions. If we already have the funds, then maybe it's easier for us to say, well, in order to get rid of the funds, this is the last year we offer those, this as an option. However, if we're looking to fund this continuously, I think it's going to be a longer talk. So I guess that's a little ambiguous to me, what we're kind of deciding with this vote.
It's Carl. Wendy.
Yeah, I actually have the resolution. So I put in the chat the award, the Employee Assembly Appreciation Award description and past winners, along with the resolution that approved our 2023-2024 budget. I have the budget open. We actually have a budgeted amount of $1,700 for staff recognition and awards. However, that also encompasses the other awards that come out of the Employee Assembly, which is the Award for Staff Integrity and Inclusion, and the George Peter Award for Dedicated Service. So after those costs come out, it's pretty much what do we have left that we could potentially award for the EA Staff Appreciation Award. I think, and Sophie or Jana or Marcy, and Kate, one of you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think what we're trying to vote on right now is the current group that was just awarded the EA Staff Appreciation Award, do we take money out of our current budget to buy them the point to award 2 months after they've received the award? Moving forward, though, and that's going to be something for the new body come June 1st, do we incorporate this into our budget and make it in there, or do we say you get a plaque and a certificate for that award? And if so, then some language does need to be changed, because I believe there is language from communication, you know, and recognition that does say that points will be awarded, or I'm not sure.
I think it would be helpful to then just go to a vote of say, let's vote for this, to have two votes. Let's vote for this year of using the point, using the money for that, and then also for future years, so it doesn't come up every year, and you know, it's not an issue each year. That's my thought.
Technically, we can't vote for future years. It's up to that body to vote for whether they want to have it in the budget or not. We can't decide the course for future assemblies.
All of that said, Sophie, I think we'll go ahead and would you like to?
Yeah, so since we can't speak for the body for next year, then we can just focus on the EA award for the Einhorn Center for this year. If we can give them the points for the EA award for this year, then. Okay, so if you vote yes, you can put the check mark for awarding points to the Einhorn Center for the 2023 EA award. Oh, sorry, Carl. I moved ahead. Sorry, do we have a motion to vote? I'm still new to this. Sorry.
Motion to vote.
Yes, so 10, so Michael, yes, that's correct. We're voting for 10 points per person, and I can tell you. And Einhorn Center had about 20 people on their in their department for context. Okay, do we have a motion to vote?
Motion to vote.
I'll second.
Okay, so green check mark for yes. The gray slowdown is okay, so okay, so we can put our check marks down. Okay, so the slowdown is to abstain. That's the gray characters. Okay, and then the red X for no. Okay, so I think Okay, so I think that's it. Thank you, everyone. Sorry about the complications. I know it was a lot of layers to this one.
All right. Thank you, Sophie. Okay, so moving on, we are now up to item six, committee reports, and I will turn it over to Marcy with the executive committee.
We've been discussing all of the meetings, all of the future people who are coming, just a few minute meetings left, and that's about, we were discussing possibly a resolution for supporting in the DEI that really hasn't come through. I'm not sure where we're at or that's what we've been discussing.
Great, thanks Marcy. And back to Sophie with the communications outreach and recognition.
Thanks everyone. Okay, so for EA Voice, we're going to give a reminder about the spring elections again. We're also going to announce the Appreciation Staff and Integrity Award. And then we're also going to have the CARE Fund again, and we're going to put the CAL's office hours. And then this month's Employee Assembly member spotlight is Erica Crawley, so she'll be our spotlight for this month.
Excellent. Thanks, Sophie. And over to Jeremy for education and development.
We have not met since the last meeting, so nothing new to report.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you, Jeremy. And Christy Mahoney with the Welfare Committee. Oh, Christy had to leave, I believe.
Yeah, she wasn't here. I'm not sure if anyone else from the committee may be here.
I guess I can give a short overview. In the last meeting, let me pull up my notes, which was today, just a couple minutes ago, we talked about some UA Welfare Committee meeting updates of a grad school with a parking resolution, some HR updates. The virtual inclusivity summit is next Tuesday, and there's an in-person summit on Wednesday, April 17th. The language line, which is a phone line that is being created to help in areas where there is someone who does not speak English as their first language, there's a translator available for people that is coming out. And I think there's some stipulations on how units pursue contracts with that. So there's some talk around that. And then next week, we'll be talking with parking again. So we had a pretty dedicated conversation around parking. And then at the end of that conversation, we also talked about some childcare challenges for Cornell employees and the community as a whole. If anyone has other things that they'd like to add, please feel free to jump in and add them.
Thanks for the update, Carl. All right, we'll move on. And actually, Bethany Dixon is out. I know she had to leave early. If there's anyone from the Benefits and Policy Committee meeting, I missed the last one. So Carl,
I'm on both. We talked about the adoption assistance plan, which has been kind of dismantled because good news is the adoption assistance plan has actually upped the coverage from $5,000 to $10,000 with a lifetime coverage of $30,000, which is three adoptions worth. There's also a new surrogacy benefit that went into effect 1/1/24. That is for the same amount. It's for $10,000 as well. So that's wonderful. As for the adoption resolution that was trying to be put through, they will never, for tax reasons, they will never cover the cost of a second parent being listed on adoption. There's just tax implications that make that impossible for Cornell to do. And as for adopting your married spouse's child, that is already covered in kind of domestic partnership, common law marriage, where Cornell is concerned, which is really the health care of that child. So that health care can happen even if you're not the legal guardian of it. So that was kind kind of the information that we got from Gordon Barger, who came to that meeting and will be present at the BPD meetings for our BPC meetings from there on out. And that's really the majority of what we talked to at the BPC meeting.
Well, thank you so much, Carl. Okay, excellent. And now turn it over to Wendy for the Elections Committee.
Thanks, Jana. So our spring election, the registration deadline is actually this coming Friday. If you are in a seat that is currently up for election, you will need to rerun. So you'll actually also have to submit a registration and all that kind of stuff. I just put the link to the spring 24 elections information in the chat. So the deadline is 5 p.m. this Friday. There's a mandatory info session next Tuesday from 12 to 12:45. I actually timed it so that if you are doing the virtual inclusive summit, you can actually attend that 1 p.m. session, which Jana has notified us about as well. Voting will start on April 11th. Sorry, I'm looking at the calendars as well. I'm doing this at 9 a.m. and it ends at noon on Monday, April 15th, with results and notification to the new EA members on Tuesday, April 16th, and they will be joining us for our meeting on Wednesday, April 17th for our organizational meeting for the 2024-2025 EA. What will happen that day is we have a regular meeting and then we go into executive session, and that's when we nominate and determine who our next executive committee will be and who will be like our representative to the University Assembly and to other constituents and liaisons. So yeah, if anyone has any questions, you can reach out to me. There is an email on the elections page. It's ca-elections@cornell.edu. I can answer questions. I did check with the Office of the Assemblies. Right now we've got only about a half a dozen registrations submitted and some in progress. So if you know of someone who might fit into one of the categories or the open seats, please, please, please talk with them and have them join us. We have some seats that actually have been empty for a couple of terms, so it would be helpful to try and get a full bunch of us. Carl, yeah. You're muted.
I have two things that I forgot to bring up for the BPC that I do need to bring up because they're important EA. So when we're done with the elections.
No, I'm all done. I'll pass my time over to you.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much. One is that there's a seat for an EA member on the Retirement Financial Review Committee. This is the committee that reviews how the 403B's plans and any retirement plans are doing. So I was asked to, or we were suggested that we bring that up at the next EA meeting and see if there's anyone that wants to sit on that meeting or on that committee. If there are, I'm pretty sure you could send Bethany Dixon an email or me at CEC232 and I can relay the information to Bethany Dixon. Also, because we had Gordon Barger there, he asked that maybe in the future that we have a meeting in the fall and maybe an October date with him so he can go over possible policy changes that are coming before the November enrollment period happens for employees. So that may be something for next year that we look into. I'll bring that up again, but I did want to put that on our radar.
Thank you. Okay. So now that our committee reports are complete, we can move into liaison reports. If anyone is a member of a liaison committee or board that you'd like to provide an update. Carl.
Hello, I guess I'm gonna get a lot of talking in at the end. So we had the UA Campus Welfare Committee meeting on the 14th, and there was discussion around graduate parking and parking in general. Grad students are unionized, so they had to talk to the union, but they are going to put forth a resolution pretty soon about parking and availability. Unfortunately, the GPSA cannot really communicate with the administration on it. It has to go through their union, because parking is a benefit of their employment. So I think that they are working on that. I'm not sure what the resolution is going to be. There was not a lot of clarity on that, but that is something that may come up in the UA soon. And I think the rest of it was kind of an overview of what we did over the year.
Great, thanks, Carl. Yes, I attended the University Assembly meeting last night, and there was some discussion on the transportation piece. So more to come on that for sure. Mm-hmm. Again, the expressive activities policy was a large item on our agenda for discussion yesterday. Still working that through. Marcy, I saw your hand go up and then go down. So if you have anything to add, please feel free to jump on in.
I just wanted to say that I did leave 10. Well, I left when the meeting should have ended. and there, most of the meeting was discussion around the expressive policy, as well as the interim policy, as well as the parking situations. That was were the two things I remember from the meeting.
Yeah, same here. So any other liaison committee reports? If not, I will go ahead and move into open discussion. Okay, so for the open discussion portion, we have about 10 minutes. If you have anything you would like to, you know, bring up, please feel free. And if there is nothing, oh, Anne, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks. At our last meeting, when Dan Moss spoke, he mentioned a weekly email, and I said I would follow up on that. So I just wanted to report back that the weekly crisis team email is something that goes to, I'm just reading from my notes here, something that's reserved for senior leadership, senior communication staff, and emergency crisis response team members. It includes staff members' personal cell phone numbers and is used by the CU police to know which crisis team individuals are on call during a particular week. If faced with an emergency, people should just call 911 or the Cornell police number. And when I spoke with Melissa Schaffmaster, who helps to put this list together, she also said that she and others in leadership encourage staff members to know who's on their emergency response teams within their units, and to encourage leaders to share that information with staff at least once a year. So I just wanted to follow up on that.
Excellent. Thank you, Anne. I appreciate that update. I would like to just chime in with a few just updates, general updates. I just want to stress the importance of attending the meeting on April 17th. So please, if you're able to, please make every effort to attend. So that is our organizational meeting, and it's really, really one of the more important meetings. Wendy?
I just want to add, typically that organizational meeting is later, it's like 2 weeks later at the beginning of May. The reason we're doing it earlier is so that we can get our next executive committee in place and get our next representatives to the UA in place, so we're kind of not scrambling. Clarification though, Jana will still be our chair until May 31st. I'm still parliamentarian until May 31st. Sophie, Marcy, and Kate, all of us are still in we're all in our role until May 31st. June 1st is when the new term starts and our new EA members will come in place. So even though we'll be nominating and deciding who our next, executive committee is and all that sort of thing, Jana will actually still be chairing the meeting through May, and then come June 1st, whomever comes after her will chair the meetings. And also, typically, we don't hold meetings over the summer. If that's helpful at all, we kick our meetings back off. We do have a retreat over the summer, typically, but then we kick our meetings back off come September.
For that clarification, Wendy. So Carl and then Michael.
Would you be able to send out a brief email about the positions and what their responsibilities are? I know that they're in our bylaws, but sometimes it can be really hard, especially for new members, to parse through those. So if we could get those in an email just so we can look at it and maybe have time to think about whether we want to apply for those positions or not, that'd be great.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you, Carl. Good idea. Michael, and then Wendy.
A couple questions. So the interim expressive activity policy, when that's set, does it become the expressive activity policy? Okay. So
Yes.
then in related to parking, so that I'm going to say probably doesn't affect my division as much, but what I do hear a lot about is parking. So is parking something that I should say, read in the university assembly and see if I could bring some of that back here or bring some input from our side, because we have a lot of trades folks here that are servicing the buildings.
Yep.
So they're out on campus quite a bit with either personal vehicles or Cornell vehicles.
Yeah. Mike, I'm sorry to jump right in, but Michael, at our meeting next week, transportation is coming to talk with the welfare committee, so that would be a good one to attend, which I know Carl already said.
Okay. And that's a UA meeting?
EA.
EA meeting. Okay.
No.
I hate to jump in
Excuse
as
me.
well, but I'll include you on an email with the committee chair of the welfare committee, and maybe we can get your inv an invitation sent to you directly. Thanks, Michael.
Hey, thank you.
Wendy?
This is actually in response to Carl with what is the role and responsibility for like the executive committee and also all of the committee chairs. I will parse that out of our governing doc. I know it sometimes is it in the bylaws, is it in the charter or anything? And I'll get that sent to everyone. I also just kind of to backtrack a little bit, there had been some discussion in our meetings and also in the education committee about how do we bring people up to speed once they've joined the employee assembly? Also, new members, we had some people that filled incidental vacancies, that sort of thing. I did put together just like a one-page document, and it's actually titled "Welcome to the Employee Assembly. Now, what should you do?" I'm good. I can. I was. I'm going to share that actually during that mandatory information session for the candidates that are running for their seats in the spring. But I'm happy to share that with all of you as well, if want to give me any input or like this is great. I do want to keep it to one, maybe two pages. I don't want a big lengthy thing because that's what our governing docs are big lengthy things. But yeah, I'll send that and also the roles and responsibilities of officers and chairs of committees prior to the April 17th meeting so that people can have a look at things.
Excellent. Thank you, Wendy. I appreciate that. I'd also like to take just a few moments while we have a few minutes left just to let you know it's a good reminder attendance to if you are unable to miss a meeting, life happens, that's fine. Just let Marcy know. If you forget to just send it to me, I can send it to Marcy. But more than two absences that you don't report ahead of time could potentially lead to a dismissal from the EA. So just to let you know that, I just want to be clear. And if you don't see any EA meetings on your calendar, if it's been accidentally deleted, whatever, please let me know. We can go ahead and get those resent to you. And that's about it for me. Does anyone have anything else? If not, I would welcome a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone. It was great to see you. See you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.